Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
They love me.
Hello and welcome to the Crystal Palace Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, Nick Gillard, who you've already heard, I think, and James Howard of Back of the Nest of that same parish. We're also joined by the wonderful DR Kernaz, yes, who I'm reliably informed sent a still image to the group WhatsApp this afternoon in order to illustrate how slowly a train was moving.
Yes, I couldn't lift my arms up properly for a long time.
And that stopped you from taking a video.
Yeah, I just had to lift up quickly, take a photo and put it back down. But I did record the driver giving an update.
Yeah, so. I know. I was going to get the producer to play that tonight if you still weren't here. But you're here. You exercise.
Yeah.
This is the man, Johnny, who before you joined the parish of Love Sport, said he didn't do any exercise.
All right. Yeah, much like Palace's, half Palace's squad.
Yes, indeed. And suddenly 2 weeks in and you can't move your arms.
Oh, yeah, today I can't. Yeah, but yesterday.
Is it me who's had this influence on you, dear?
No, not really. How comes?
I don't know. I was just thinking since I've arrived, you've suddenly got on this health kick. I'm not saying anything.
Have you got a personal trainer or do you just...
No, I just go with a mate. Oh, yeah, okay. I've looked into it.
It's relaxed. It's relaxed. Nick, you, of course, have some news for us. We're getting our weekly updates on the cats. How are they getting on?
Well, I got the gender wrong last week. According to my daughter...
Is your daughter a cat gendering expert?
Well, she was prepared to actually have a feel and see whether there was anything there or not.
Brave.
And she's decided that there's two girls and a boy.
Right. After extensive research.
Yes. She did what the parents wouldn't do.
And do we have any names?
Constantine is just the one name.
Right.
Because we don't want to name the others because it's going to be hard enough for them to go. She is going to be in bits.
So is Constantine staying?
Yes.
Right, okay. So Constantine is a permanent fixture. The rest are there on loan.
She's going to be the constant.
Why don't you call both of the others Michi Batshuayi as cats that are doing well for the club at the moment but probably won't be here next season?
Michi's a good name, as is Batshuayi.
Well, like one's called Michi, one's called Batshuayi.
Catshuayi.
Catshuayi. You see, we sorted it. And James Howard is, of course, here with us as well. The wonderful James Howard. Busy week. Any cats?
No, but we are purchasing a puppy.
I see. Which called Michi Dogshuayi, presumably.
breaking news for you guys. Well, I did mention it to Nick the other day. A family, we've all caved in to the children. They wanted to get a puppy and we've got one. We've put a deposit on and we're still going through the name stage at the moment.
See, what's the breed?
It's a Pouchon.
A Pouchon?
Have you heard of that?
No. Is it a mixture, a Bichon and a poodle?
Yes. Well done. Brilliant. Well done. Yeah.
So very fluffy.
It's very fluffy, cuddly, affectionate and with the intelligence of a poodle. It's a boy.
You've checked.
Well,
Nick's daughter's been called
it. I haven't actually, to be honest. We've been told it's a boy. So we've had a few names sort of passed around, but they've got their name they want, and I had my one, which was...
Come on then, what's the name your kids want? What's the name you want?
They want Teddy.
Right.
They think it looks like a Teddy.
Okay.
So I'm kind of like, Ted's okay, not sure about Teddy. And I was after Wilf, but
what about Aaron?
Yeah, that's I haven't actually asked him.
Or you could go for Roy, but then DR wouldn't be very keen on him.
Exactly. Yeah,
might not blow.
I'll stay away from your dog.
So you've paid a deposit. I bet you get lots of deposits back for that.
Well,
all over
we
the
will do over the
training.
First few weeks.
Our producer, by the way, Josh, is currently wincing. It's a head-in-hands scenario. Wasn't head-in-hands, of course, for Palace at the weekend. James, you were mentioning there that Ted or Wilf or whatever the poor fella ends up being called is going to be fluffy and intelligent. Palace have been intelligent for much of this season, but do you think they were a bit too fluffy, a bit too nice as they took on Everton?
Yeah, I think they were. Unfortunately, we didn't have... I was hoping for some experimental formations on Saturday and a little bit more positive following the great win at Arsenal, but it seemed to revert back to the last home game that we had. And although, you know, we didn't lose and it was 0-0, and a lot of people were saying, you know, 0-0 isn't a bad result against Everton, I still felt that we could have done better, and there were some significant things that the manager should have done or could have done during the game. We only used one substitution. They used all their three substitutions. And, you know, I'm still worried about the consistency of key players in our team. But overall, it was a bit of a bore draw, 0-0. However, probably the result was quite reasonable against Everton.
Yeah, I think it was. When you look at the lineup, it was actually an encouraging lineup because you had Kuya today, which I've always rooted for. You had Max starting, Wilf, Benteke. So on paper, it was a strong lineup. But then again, I think the way that we were set up tactically, we didn't really get the best out of players. And of course, some players didn't perform as well. So I think it was a combination of both tactics and player performances that really let us down. But it was, I think it was a typical Palace performance from this season. We haven't had many exciting games, and it was just one of them games where, despite being safe, we weren't really going for it. And yeah, a 0-0 was probably a fair result.
Had we been still not mathematically safe, fans would have been saying it was 2 points dropped.
Yeah,
but it was such an on the beach game. But as for the lineup, I mean, he's experimenting a bit, putting Meyer out on the wing,
yeah,
and leaving Wilf up top. And I although Wilf's good up top, I prefer him on the wing.
I prefer him called Ted. I prefer him called Ted.
Ted.
Very good. And PVA came back in. And I think that is because Richarlison is quick.
So hang on, where do we stand on Patrick Van Aanholt then? Because we've come and gone in every direction about him on this show. First, it was he's a weak link, he's defensively fragile. Then it was, well, he's getting a bit more solid and he's very, very dangerous going forward. He can finish as well, which we saw against Huddersfield. Then we were back to he was wobbly and the team improved without him in. Mm. How did he get on against Everton?
I thought he was reasonably okay, actually. I don't think he was as bad as he was the other week. But he did okay, and I think that he is just one of those players that I've said are a little bit inconsistent this season. Mm. And that's the problem. I don't know if the others noticed, but I felt that Everton were absolutely targeting that side of the pitch, especially the first half. I didn't see anything come down Wan-Bissaka's side.
No. Give PVA his due. Who was that player? He sprinted back and got an excellent tackle in.
Yeah.
I was screaming for a penalty, but he...
That was Richarlison as well, I think. Yeah,
was it?
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
And how did he commit so many fouls in the first 15 minutes without being booked, Richarlison? He was one of these players, you'd love him on your team because he winds up the other team so much and the opposition fans so much. But I thought the ref was a little bit lenient with him.
It's not only Richarlison, I think the whole Everton squad, they were just getting away with so many fouls. And considering that they didn't receive one single yellow card, I thought it was a disappointing performance from the referee. And let's say that we weren't safe, then yeah, we'll probably talk about the ref a bit more. But as we're safe now, you're not really that focused on the actual result and the referee performances, I think. But in terms of Patrick Van Aanholt, I feel like he had a decent game, but then again, he could have done better. And I don't know how to look at it. I want to be optimistic with him and say, you know what, he could slightly improve. He sat against Arsenal, maybe had some time to think about his performances and just look at it from the outside. But I don't know. It's two games left. All we want is really for him to try his best and see from then on. But I still feel like left back this summer could probably be the one position that we need to actually target.
Well, you know, this goes back to what Johnny was just saying. You know, how do we feel about, you know, him getting back into the team straight away? Because we did win at Arsenal and you think, well, hold on, why didn't Ward retain his place? So you have to look at the bigger picture and think, right, what was Roy doing here? Was he just saying, right, you've made enough mistakes recently, you're a weak link, and I need to demonstrate this to the rest of the team? You know, is obviously highlighted on the highlights programme on Saturday night how weak he was the previous game, and he has been making mistakes throughout other games as well. So I believe that he is Roy's favourite. at the moment, and I think he knows that he's dealing with an international player, and on his day is extremely good going forward, as we know.
Yeah.
And if we can keep him, if we can shore up, as I've said to you before, Nick, at his defensive play, whether that's from the manager or the captain or the centre-backs, he will be, or can be, an extremely good player. And I think if maybe Roy is thinking that if I start leaving him out week in, week out, he could end up getting a transfer request.
Yeah.
And then we lose a quality player, and then all we've got is Wardy, who's obviously getting on a bit, and we can't rely on that happening.
I think, yeah, I understand what you're saying, but I still think we need a new left back just to give him something. Like, right now, there isn't no one challenging the left back position apart from Van Aanholt, as Slap is not seen as a left back, even though when he's brought in, he was mainly considered as one. So we need to actually bring in a left back,
Kelly,
just to give him a challenge. Kelly is a centre back. I don't see Kelly as a left back. More, he's right footed. So if he was to play somewhere, it would probably be right back rather than left back. I think Joel Ward is probably the best option for left back, but then again, that's not a good enough challenge, and sometimes you need to give the players something to think about. And maybe left back position this summer, no matter how good it might not be, an upgrade, but just someone who can challenge with Van Aanholt, I think that might just do the job.
Changes could be aplenty in the summer for Palace. Could it be a change of boss? DR, you've been quite negative about a certain Mr. Hodgson in the past, and perhaps your frustration was justified against Everton because Palace's Premier League status is safe, and yet still going into games showing serious amounts of caution. Don't go anywhere.
This is Love Sport.
It's the Crystal Palace Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and DR Kernaz, Nick Gillard and James Howard off back of the nest. Now, Palace is safe. Premier League survival secure for another season. Broadly, a good year, really. And yet, there are no risks being taken going into games. This is the window where if you're the manager and you're thinking, well, there's stuff I wanted to try out this year, but I didn't want to risk valuable points, pressure's off. Experiment, tinker, be brave, take those risks. It's not happening. Roy played it very, very safe against Everton. Why do you think he's still being so cautious?
I think it's just how he approaches games. I think it's simply as that. That's how he sees the game. He'll rather keep a clean sheet. And you can see that by the way that was set up. I feel like against Everton, the gap between the midfield and attack at times was just so big that it influence how Benteke played, and I think Zaha as well, because we already know that Zaha is going to get triple teamed and double teamed, and when you don't have the support next to him, he's going to struggle even more. And I think that was pretty much the case. It seemed like, I understand it from certain point, of course you want to keep a clean sheet and be solid defensively, but then again, we haven't seen many goals at Selhurst Park this season. I'd rather we gave it a go and, you know, try to score more goals, whether that means leaving space out at the back, then just sit back and play for 0-0. What's the point?
I totally agree, actually. And you only got to look at the bench, and you've got Batshuayi, Ayew and Bakary Sakho, you know, forwards or attacking players, and they didn't start, and also they didn't even get on the pitch. I mean, I just find that shocking, really.
Everton made three changes. I still don't understand why we're not using all our substitutes. Bakary Sakho, for instance, we brought him in. We, you know, before he left us, he scored a couple goals under Roy. So I was excited to see what he could do for the next couple of months. But he's barely played. I don't know if that's due to fitness, but he's on the bench, so he's fit to a certain degree. So I don't understand why he's not coming on, at least.
Yeah, well, we had this conversation last week about playing Benteke because he's our player. We don't think we're going to have Batshuayi, so I can understand that, why Benteke is getting picked. But yeah, you're right about the sub, and I'm sure all Palace fans would like to see Tekkers and Batshuayi on the pitch at the same time. I don't think we've actually seen it yet.
No, we haven't.
And what you've got to remember is we're talking about defensive football. We've had a rubbish season. Those of us who only go to home games. It's been absolute. No, seriously, it's been one of the worst seasons I've known. And you look at the away performance and you think, wow, that's how you play football. It's just getting that right. And we're safe earlier than we have been in the previous seasons.
Yeah.
And so, that's an advance. That's a success. We might finish where was it last year? We finished 10th or 11th. We might finish there or thereabouts this season. So that's good considering with the striker problem we had at the start of the season. We'd have taken that then, wouldn't we?
Yeah, but we should take... I feel like we should take advantage of the situation in a way that we haven't really seen a plan B this season. And maybe try something new. So next season, if it doesn't work out, you're going to, you know, you could see, oh, these players can work under this new tactic. But we haven't seen that. We're still using plan A when we're safe. That's why it makes no sense.
Indeed, not hitting the team with some stupid formation with players out of position in the first game of the season like De Boer did. Let's try it now when the points, do matter, but they don't matter. Yeah. It's all money, but...
Do you think the fact that Roy isn't experimenting at this point perhaps suggests that he's got no interest in experimenting at all? Do you think that he's just happy with the system he's got, the way he plays, the players he's got broadly, and he doesn't see the point of trying two up top because he just has no interest in playing that?
100%. I feel like if Roy was going to make changes, then after we confirmed survival, then he would have made it. But there's only two games left. He's still using the same tactics and certain players in the same way. So I've got no hope for him to change it for the last two games. And that's why it's been a bit frustrating. Even in Everton, I was just sitting down and I have nothing to be excited about. It's sucking the soul out of me at home. 14 goals in 18 games. It's just not acceptable, especially with the players we've got. I know that we've argued with you before, Johnny, about how we may overrate our squad, but I still feel like we've got players capable enough to score more than 14 goals in 18 games. I feel like we've got the talent there, but we're just not taking advantage of it. And I have no hope for him to change it.
Yeah, we missed a trick because, you know, you could have dropped Wilf back to, you know, left midfield or right midfield and switched him throughout the game. And that's what we needed. We needed a bit of creativity. It was obvious on the pitch for me. And the trouble is with Benteke is that he's so inconsistent that he doesn't even hold the ball up when he's, you know, having a bad game, which is a problem because then it means the ball's just bouncing back off him, back into our defence, and we're having to sort of, you know, regain possession again. So I don't know. It's something that I would have liked to have seen a bit more experimental, and maybe moving a few players in different positions.
I'd like to have seen some basics as well, like Wilf learning and knowing when to cross. That would have been really helpful.
Do you think that's a problem in his game?
It was on Saturday.
Is it more broadly?
No, because he got better.
But do you think it's tactics? Rather than Wilf, maybe he's just instructed to cut in. Because all season long, we haven't been the club to put crosses into the box.
But we got Benteke there. I know, he scored last week when we did.
Yeah, it makes no sense, I understand. But that's what we're talking about here. We don't change it up. We just go with plan A. There's no plan B. Even little things like that, we haven't really seen it.
So that's why I said that if you had played Benteke and Batshuayi up front, then you could have had Townsend on one side and Wilf on the other. And then then we could have seen what Benteke could do with the service.
Yeah, and also he could mix
who
up like
your
that.
Left. Who Kouyaté and Luka?
Yeah, I wouldn't have played Max Meyer, to be honest with you, because I think I said to you the last home game he wasn't particularly great, and I don't think it was really that good on Saturday either.
Yeah, I still would have dropped. I think James McArthur, if he's our weakest link, I think I'll put Andros Townsend ahead of him. If you're looking at
different players. Type of player, I couldn't agree with you on that one,
because Luka and Kouyaté, they're the core in midfield, and James McArthur, I just don't see him as like a wide player. I feel like when we play McArthur, Kouyaté and Luka in that formation, we're just missing that extra wide player who could, you know, put the balls into the box. So also combined with Benteke, I feel like James McArthur doesn't really deliver that.
And when we talk about the potential for managerial tweaks, these aren't just decisions that a manager can make before a game. He's also, of course, got the opportunity to change things during the clash off the bench. Only made one sub against Everton. And coming up, we'll be discussing that lack of substitutions.
This is Love Sport.
It's the Crystal Palace Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and DR Kernaz, Nick Gillard and James Howard of Back of the Nest. And while our focus is always on Crystal Palace here on the Crystal Palace Fan Show, There is Champions League action tonight as well, something we will be discussing. And we got some team news for you from Spurs versus Ajax. For Tottenham, it's Lloris, Davinson Sanchez, Toby Alderweireld and Jan Vertonghen, both, of course, formerly of Ajax. Wanyama, Trippier, Eriksen, Ali, Rose, Llorente and Lucas Moura. An exciting attack, really, if you consider how many players they've got out injured. And for Ajax, it's Onana in goal, Veltman, De Ligt, Blind, Taliafico, Schürrle, De Jong, Hakim Ziyech, Van de Beek, David Neres and Dusan Tadic. This Ajax team, of course, is very, very young, very, very exciting, punching way beyond its weight so far in the Champions League, already taken the notable scouts of both Juventus and Real Madrid. Do you think they're going to give Spurs a problem?
Yeah, I think so. They've just got hungry young players in their team, and sometimes that's the biggest advantage. Maybe talent overcomes at times. Talent could overcome the youth, but I think like the youth will give a good challenge, I think, in this fixture especially. That's Ajax's main advantage, is the fact that they've got young, hungry players that's trying to win the Champions League, which sounds crazy now, but it is a possibility. And if they all play their A game, then you never know what could happen. You saw against the Tottenham Man City game in the Champions League, for instance, last 2 minutes VAR just changed the game. Small things like that could happen. VAR could influence the game, but all they have to do is just effort. And I feel like if the effort is there, then they've got a chance.
They have, absolutely. Nick, where do you stand on this tie?
I think Ajax have got belief, but I'm not sure they'll be able to. I think Spurs are just beginning to warm into their new stadium. They've had a lot of high profile fixtures, really, for their opening games, especially that first one that I played there. Ajax are a good, exciting team. I'd like to see them go through, simply because Tottenham didn't win the league, so why are they in the competition anyway? I'm an old fuddy-duddy like that.
So old school.
Well, then go off and do a league. Well, somebody was talking about divisions, promotion and relegation in a European league, I read last week in the interim.
Yeah, but it was suggested by Juventus. We're really pushing for it.
Yeah, there's always that talk, though. I remember we talked about it a month ago, about the Super League.
Yeah, I think, to be fair, the difference with this new one that's being suggested is there would be promotion and relegation, and it wouldn't therefore be just reputation-based. But, Nick, of course, it wouldn't just be the winners of the leagues, unfortunately. Do you think Spurs are going to go through?
I can't call it. It's too tight to call.
It's too tight to call. Very exciting. We'll be bringing you updates, of course, from that game throughout the show. James, can you call it? Would you tip one side or the other?
I think the problem for Spurs tonight is they're playing at home and they need to get an advantage, but they haven't got Harry Kane or Son. That's a massive blow for them.
But they haven't missed Harry Kane that much.
I think Son is going to be a big miss. He was.
So I would say if either one of those was playing, they'd stand a chance of maybe, you know, getting 1-2-0 and then going over there and just holding out for a draw maybe. But I think because of those two key players missing, I'm a little bit worried for Spurs, to be honest with you. I'm not positive.
It would, to be fair, obviously, we're keen on Spurs here at Love Sport, a London-centric station. But Ajax in a Champions League final, there is a ring to that, there's a history to that, and we'll be bringing you updates throughout the show. Talking Palace, talking changes. Spurs, of course, are going to be very limited this evening. They've already got a fairly limited squad in terms of just the number of personnel. Obviously, as we were saying, various key men out. So substitutions may be a problem for Pochettino. They're nominally not a problem for Roy Hodgson. If we look at the bench that he had available to him versus Everton, Andros Townsend's in there, Jordan Ayew's in there, Michy Batshuayi's in there, Sacco's in there. So there is talent to be brought on should he have needed it. Only Townsend was introduced in a game that was deadlocked, 0-0, one change made. Do you think we should have seen two? Do you think we should have seen all three?
Yeah, said it before, I feel like we're safe, so I don't understand why you wouldn't want to see other players just come into the squad, so you just know their strengths. I think Townsend, it made sense due to how the game was going. Hopefully the intention, I guess, was to bring him on, and hopefully he would give a bit more going forward. But I would have liked to see other players other than Townsend.
Do you think he's been rested because he's had such a heavy season so far?
I think so. I think that's why it makes sense not to start him. And I think that's a good call by Roy and the management, because he has played a lot of games. But so has James McArthur. But then again, I don't think Roy trusts Jairo Riederwald, who seems like he's off. But maybe this would be a good time for him to show his worth as well. If we're going to sell him, put him out there for 2-3 games, and you could let teams, you know, be aware of him and say, look, this is a player, and if you want him, then you can get him in the summer. But teams haven't seen him for a very long time, so they won't be as willing potentially to pay as much as maybe we may be asking for. If you're playing for a couple of games, his value could potentially increase, but we're not going down that option, so it's typical Palace.
Trying to respect the point too much, I think, on Saturday. Yeah. Not wanting to.
I think the season.
Defensively, we were solid. I didn't feel at any time in the game that I wasn't worried about Everton scoring.
Even when Cenk Tosun almost scored and there was an absolutely extraordinary save made, you weren't worried about Everton scoring at that point?
No.
With the ball flying towards the Palace net, there was no part of you that thought Everton might grab a goal here?
No.
You are so...
No, I did. But they hit the post a couple of times. They were better than us on the day. I mean, we played like a team that didn't need the points so much.
Yeah.
I was surprised that Everton weren't better, in fact, simply because they still had the chance of the seventh place.
I have to give a quick shout out to Gaeta again, as you mentioned, that save. That was a brilliant save. The reactions there were just magnificent. And as I said, I feel like I've said this before, he's going to only improve as he plays more games, and it's showing.
How do goalkeepers get such strength in their wrists? Because it's the wrist that's
it's the stopping. Gloves that probably help you.
Well, they do help you a little bit, but to actually, I know the ball's coming at you hard, but for your wrist not to actually be bent back by the force of it.
It's the gloves, trust me.
Well, you get those squeezy things.
Yeah, what the guitar players.
Yeah, where you can build up.
Strengthen up your muscles. Mm. Yeah. Perhaps they use those these days, goalkeepers. We'll have to ask.
I'm sure they're doing all sorts of clever tricks, it has to be said. They will have secrets up their sleeve. I'll tell you what, I will ask Richard Lees, who is Love Sport Drive presenter, former Watford Brentford keeper. I'll ask him, and on the show next week, we'll have an update from a Premier League stopper.
If it's the gloves, Gordon Banks made saves like that. He weren't wearing gloves.
And also, I have put on some quite high-tech goalkeeper gloves and I still just fell over, so they don't solve everything. Palace, of course, doing the business on the pitch, doing the business off the pitch as well. And the Palace for Life Foundation has been a massive part of that, doing really, really good work in the community. And in just a moment, we'll be talking to Stephanie Fuller of that organisation to find out about the great work they do.
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Crystal Palace Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and DR Kernaz, Nick Gillard and James Howard of Back of the Nest. I'm delighted to say we're also joined on the line by Stephanie Fuller of the Palace for Life Foundation. Good evening, Stephanie. Thanks ever so much for joining us. You've been doing some fantastic work recently.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me onto your show, first of all, to talk about the foundation. Well, I think when you say I've been doing some work, I think really it's a foundation. I'm a trustee of the Palace for Life Foundation, which is a great privilege of mine to have to do that. It's an incredible foundation.
So, hello, Steph. How are you doing?
I'm good, Nick. How are you?
I'm all right. I managed to stay awake through that game on Saturday. It was crud, wasn't it? What did you think of the game Saturday? And then we'll move on to Palace for Life in a minute.
Well, do you know what? I had very low expectations for that game and it failed to meet them. So I think that kind of says everything. I suppose it's a bit of a weird situation for Palace fans at the moment, isn't it? Because in reality, you know, this is kind of the season we all dreamed of, like where we didn't have to worry about relegation or anything like that. And now we've got it, it's a bit unsatisfactory, really. We sort of want a bit more excitement, so I don't quite know what...
Are you saying you want to be in a relegation battle, Steph?
No, I don't. No, definitely not. But I sort of think that Palace fans, because we had a kind of FA Cup quarter-final and it felt like we were going somewhere with that, and then we weren't, and then, you know, we lost two games to a team from the South Coast we don't really want to talk about. So those things have made the whole thing feel much more negative than the actual sort of league position really is. But I guess the nub of it is we just don't win at home. And actually, if you only go to home games, then you've had an absolutely miserable time watching Palace this season.
Yeah, I said that earlier on. Right, so most people who go to Palace, listen to various podcasts and whatever, will know about the Marathon March. That's October the 13th this year, is it?
It is, yeah.
Oh, that's good. I don't know where I drew that from. The adverts on the screen worked, didn't they?
They do. It's soaked in, isn't it? That's good to know.
We did it last year. It was great fun. It was hard work, wasn't it, dear?
Yeah, it was.
So we managed, I can't remember how many, much back of the nest raised, but where did all that money go? What was it spent on?
What was it spent on? Well, it goes into a variety of different things, to be quite honest with you. Obviously, you know, the foundation, the Personal Life Foundation, is a charity, so it needs revenue to run its programmes. And if you look at the very many different programmes that the Palace for Life Foundation provides, it doesn't take very long to realise that actually that costs a lot of money to provide that kind of depth of provision to such a broad and diverse community. So I probably couldn't give you pound for pound exactly where it's all landed. But what I can tell you is it's gone towards some incredibly important local interventions, which are helping people, say, from as broad a range of topics as interventions when young people are perhaps falling on the verge of, you know, moving into offending, through to weight loss programs to ensure that people are actually living more healthily in the local community, where, you know, like things like childhood obesity are an issue. It goes towards things such as with the power chairs that the foundation funds for the Disability Power Chair League. So it goes to lots and lots of different things. I think it's one of the things with the Palace for Life Foundation is until you start to scratch the surface of it, you don't really realise quite how much work that foundation does. It's amazing.
And in terms of those interventions that the organisation are responsible for, what does that entail? How do you help a young person when they're perhaps coming to a crossroads and they could turn in a potentially damaging direction? How do you help them at that point without alienating them?
Well, you know, I'm certainly not the person that does that, but the foundation has a number of, you know, it works in partnership with other organisations to use the power of football.
Sorry,
and
Steph,
the brand of Palace.
Can I just interject there? Hello, Steph. Sorry, we've got Inspector Jack Rowlands coming on next week, who actually works for Divert, who worked with the foundation. So he'll be a better person to ask that question. Sorry, Johnny.
That's all right.
No, he would be. But to take the point on, though, because, I mean, that's a classic example then, really, is that what the Palace for Life Foundation does is that, you know, where there are problems that are facing all aspects of our local community, really, but particularly young people, you know, they seek to partner with professionals to then use and leverage, really, the brand of Crystal Palace and the power of football as a really positive force to connect people back to a slight, you know, to a better path. So it's not, Divert is something particularly interesting around the custody suite, I think, at Croydon Police Station. But, you know, there are other programmes that the club runs as well, whereby people may not have actually offended, for instance, the foundation runs that may not have offended, but they're on the radar of doing so. And then those young people are signposted to more positive interventions that are delivered by the Palace for Life Foundation. So, like I say, it's very varied, because next to that, you've kind of got Healthy Eagles, and then you've got, you know, Teammates, which is a programme for children in sort of primary school, which is about, you know, helping young children develop their resilience, talk about emotions. And these are children that are obviously being flagged in school as having particular problems. And again, it's using the kind of position of football to have a conversation that maybe is a bit more difficult when it's just a cold conversation, whereas actually people are attracted to something which is what hopefully is a positive brand in the Crystal Palace itself and the role that, you know, it plays in South London.
So, Steph, give us a taste. Are there any things in particular that the organisation have got coming up that we can look forward to?
Well, I mean, Nick's mentioned it in terms of the big thing, you know, the Marathon March right at the beginning. And I've done the first 2 years of this. And halfway through the second one, I said, I'm not doing this again. and then somebody pointed out to me, oh, no, how can you not do it again? Because now you've got to get your hat trick. So they're right. So I have got to go back. I have already signed up to do a third year of the Marathon March, and I'm really looking forward to that. And what I would say about that is that no matter almost how the team's performing, that march is an incredible day for Palace fans, because you get to walk all across South London, right up into town, you know, repping the club colours through boroughs that aren't really ours, but we like to let people know we're here. And you also get to chat to Palace fans that you probably never met before, and you find out the most amazing stories about, you know, why they supported Palace, how they got into it, family histories, all bunch of stuff. I've met several friends through that march who I didn't know before, and I, for me, it's the best day of the year for being a Palace fan. Yeah, it really is. And so I would urge anyone who hasn't already signed up for the Marathon March to do it. You do need to train for it. And my top tip would be get 1,000-mile socks. it's a really good day. It raises a lot of money, and that, you know, that those funds go towards some really important interventions. And I think it's easy to, I know there's lots of charities in the world and there's lots of good causes that you could give to. But for me, when, you know, when you talk about the song Palace fans sing about South London's number one, well, for me, it's the foundation. That is South London's number one because of the work it does.
Well, I will give testament to the walk, because since I did the walk, I actually trained for it. And DR said he thought I was on drugs because I did it so easily, but it was just a case of walking.
Performance enhancing.
Yes. Yeah. Walking 6 miles three times a week was enough train, you know, for 6 or 7 weeks was enough to do it. But yeah, I completely agree with what you said about meeting other people. Back to my walking, I'm up to 50 miles a week now. I love it.
I thought you'd say 50 miles an hour then. No. I was thinking you got rockets on your shoes.
Wow. But yeah, the thing is, are you 50 miles away from home by the end of the week? Is that what happens?
No, I wish.
We actually make him walk back from the studio, Steph, so that's how he gets his training in.
Yeah, I think that sounds right, actually. And I think that's fair. Well, obviously, the Love Sport budget doesn't extend to Ubers and things like that, does it?
Well, poor old Albert was training, so he decided to walk to the Love Sport studio from home. He lives in Watford. Whoa. And he was three quarters of the way here to get the message, oh, we've been moved to Wednesday this week.
Oh, no. So that was a bad walking-related story. An excellent walking-related story is, of course, this marathon walk organised by the Palace for Life Foundation. Stephanie, it sounds like a wonderful thing that everyone should get involved with. It's been lovely speaking to you. Thanks ever so much for your time. Stephanie Fuller there of the Palace for Life Foundation. You can, sure, get involved with events and helping out with them on their website. Looking back to Palace's fortunes on the pitch, we're going to turn our attentions to that draw with Everton. And coming up, it's time for your winners and losers. Who perform well? Who let the side down? Don't go anywhere.
This is Love Sport.
Crystal Palace fan show here on Love Sport Radio with Johnny Burrow and back of the nest. That's DR Kernaz, Nick Gillard, and of course, James Howard. We've touched on the Everton game and basically decided it was disappointing. There was a lack of invention from Hodgson. There was a lack of risk-taking. And in the end, as Nick, you said, Everton were probably the better side on the day. That said, there were some good performances, many good performances for Palace. Let's start with the positives. Who were your winners from the weekend?
I'm going to change it up and not go with that average...
average wing-back?
Yeah, wing-back, yeah. I'm going to go with Vicente just for that save, and also he had a couple other saves before that as well. I feel like he has saved us so many times already this season, and he hasn't even played a full season yet. So I think he had a good game once again. When the defence let us down, he was there to save us. So yeah, I think he has to be Vicente for me.
Yeah, I think overall defence did really well. Initially, I think the first 5 minutes or so, there was a bit of a wobble from Dan. But my standout player of the game, I felt, was Kelly. Okay. I was watching him because somebody mentioned him as being the standout player, I think, a couple of weeks before that or whatever. And I thought, yeah, I'll make sure I make a note of exactly what he does during the game. And to be honest with you, I thought, you know, he was there for pretty much everything. And although it might have been some simple stuff, he did it properly. He didn't make any mistakes. I didn't see any mistakes from
Kelly. Yeah, it was just Kelly. Him and Scott Dan at the beginning, as you said.
I think that was more Dan that was sort of caught out a bit there.
Yeah, apart from that, yeah, I think the defence did have a pretty good game.
Pretty solid game.
Yeah, considering they don't really play as much all season, and it's not a starting back four as well, so.
I think when we say, you know, I don't want to criticise the team for Saturday.
Mm.
Me personally, I'm criticising the manager and the tactics rather than the team, because I think the majority of the team did a reasonable, pretty good job.
I mean, Everton are no slouches. They're a good side. And the defence and the keeper, as you say, put in a good performance. And I think the midfield was solid. What we lacked was creativity and something different that we haven't had at home. And I firmly put the blame and responsibility on the manager for that.
Mm. What about you, Nick?
We are getting really good at putting blocks in. Have you noticed that over the past few weeks? When teams are on us, we players are fearless in getting in the way and blocking them. So Tompkins and Dan especially. But for industriousness and actually putting himself about a lot, I think Jimmy Mack, you know, did above average. I could say Wan-Bissaka, he had a brilliant run up. It was,
but he's hopeless, Nick.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
no, I've got to give him a bit of credit for when he overlapped, and that's what I think Roy's tactic was for PVA or AWB to overlap with MacArthur and Meyer maybe dropping in a bit and using them more centrally. But he was very, very good going forward with the ball. He got a couple of crosses in. Okay, they weren't brilliant, but that wind, I know they blame the wind. I'm not sounding like Klopp, I hope, too much. But the other thing was, how many misplaced passes were there, or misjudged passes, simply because of the wind? I mean, how many heart-in-mouth moments were there in the first 10 minutes where a ball had been played short? It's from both teams as well, so...
Yeah, it's not like the wind, it was on our side and not Everton. It was for both teams, I understand what you're saying. But yeah, I understand what you mean by James MacArthur. He didn't have a bad game, but you could see his influence in the pitch. But loser, on the other side, this might sound a bit controversial and I might be looking a bit too into it, but maybe Zaha. For the fact that at times, I don't know if I was influenced by people around me, but at times all I heard was just, Zaha, just why don't you give the ball? And I was looking at, when I heard that one or two times, I was looking at him and I was like, you know what, he could give the ball. But then again, I wouldn't say he was 100% a loser, because as I said in the start of the show, I feel like him and Benteke didn't have as much support at times. And I feel like that influenced him as well, because no matter how good you are, he's no Messi. He's not going to go past 3-4 defenders that surrounded him. But then again, his decision making, I feel like it was an off game from him, which can happen to anyone. So I'm not that worried about it.
You've mentioned his name, so I'm going to come in with Benteke was the loser, because he got absolutely no service whatsoever. I felt sorry for him by the end of the game because it was poor. There was a couple of occasions where the ball could have been played square to him. All right, knowing Benteke, he probably ballooned it over on past evidence.
We've got to give him a chance to balloon it.
And I've genuinely felt sorry for him.
Well, I think that... I agree with you, actually. I'd written down here that Zaha didn't have a good game.
Yeah.
I think he's becoming very, very frustrated. And there were occasions where I think Zaha looked up and he thought, who can I pass to? And it's Benteke. And I don't think he wants to pass to him. I'm worried that he thinks that if I pass to Benteke, the way he's playing at the moment, he's just going to ping off him and he's not going to control it. And then it just comes all... So I think Zaha's getting frustrated with not having someone up front to be able to work as well as he does in retaining possession. And maybe that's the reason.
Could Zaha, though, and I don't know, we're not inside the bloke's head.
I think I know what you're saying. I was thinking about that as well, because I saw comments, but go ahead.
Is he in the shop window, putting himself in the shop window and trying too hard? Because when he... I don't know, because he scored against Arsenal. He played well against Arsenal. Now, that's the difference between teams at the sort of below sixth and the rest, the top six, is they've got players who are consistent, apart from Man United at the moment. Well, they've all choked the last couple of weeks, but that's where the money buys the players that can do it week in, week out. We've got a team of players who on their day are magnificent and can beat anybody. But there's just too many inconsistencies within that team. And watching Palace is so frustrating because it's always been, since ever I'd supported them, save a couple of seasons, moments of absolute brilliance and sublime football that you thought you'd never ever see at Selhurst, followed by absolute tosh.
Yeah. The reason why I don't think that's the case is for two reasons. One, Zaha he, as you said, against Arsenal, he had a good performance. It's not like Zaha has been really bad for a couple of weeks. It was just one game. And two, you could see his passion on the pitch. Whenever a ball, let's say he loses a ball, or sometimes he wants a ball and it don't get received, he's annoyed. He's caring for the team. That's what my point is. Yep. He's caring for the team, and you could see it by his reaction. So that's why I'm not that worried about, oh, his head is twisted and he's looking out of the club and trying to get a move away.
Right, there are two issues I want to get to the heart of here on Zaha. The first is, DR, with reference to his head perhaps being turned by a top side. Nick, I'm really interested by this idea of his consistency, or perhaps lack thereof. Do you think the fact that the Wilf we see every week isn't the best Wilf rules him out of being quite good enough for a Manchester City, for a Dortmund? Or do you think that would come?
Perhaps. I'm just looking at his stats. He's not getting many assists at all, which shows perhaps a little bit of greed.
How many assists has he got?
Three.
But is that counting the penalties he's won? It can't be.
Exactly.
Can
it? Yeah, it doesn't count. It doesn't. That, yeah.
And he's actually set up quite a few goals for Milivojevic by getting brought down.
Yeah, I don't think it's really greed. I really don't. I just think that.
But do you think that he's not consistent enough to play at a top club?
No, I don't think that. I think this season you can't.
You think he could play at a top
Yeah,
club?
Yeah. I think if you look at this season, there's been so many players that have underperformed. I think it's due to what he's instructed to do. Maybe if he was playing for a top club and was given more freedom and more support, which is expected, then he would have got more goals and assists. But this season, that hasn't really been the case.
Yeah, I take your point. I don't think that freedom would make him a more consistent finisher, but I'm sure his output would improve. The other interesting question here with Zaha is the point that you brought up, James, of perhaps he's frustrated by his teammates. Perhaps the reason why he wasn't releasing the ball is he got a bit annoyed and he was looking round him, and instead of it being Sergio Aguero off his left shoulder, it was Christian Benteke, and he looked at him and thought, you know what, I don't really fancy giving you the ball. If that is what's going on, and if there is that potential angle of the shop window ahead of the summer, should we be worried as Palace fans that actually Wilf has gone, I've had enough of playing with these idiots, you're not as good as I am?
Yeah, absolutely, definitely. I'm really worried that the likes of, you know, Aaron Wan-Bissaka and Wilf will think, you know what, we're just static here. We're not going anywhere.
And if we look at Wilf's comments about the Champions League as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, he doesn't want to be stuck in a team that's just happy to survive in the Premier League. And he's going to be frustrated if he hasn't got someone up front that's got quality. I just think that we've just given Benteke long enough to really sort of, you know, get back to his form that he had a couple of seasons ago. And if we don't start looking into replacements quickly, then the likes of Wilf will possibly look elsewhere.
So simple question then, is Wilf going this summer?
Well, Roy has said that he's not. I've read somewhere, I can't remember if it's just made up nonsense, but Zaha can go to a Champions League club if he wants, but not an English one.
Okay.
I was going to say, seeing Mbappe and Neymar and Wilf together would be great, but how long is Neymar going to be banned for slapping that fan?
Yes, probably quite a while.
I don't know. I've got a feeling he'll stay next season, but I don't know. The thing is, as Steph said, we've done all right. We're safe earlier.
But isn't the point that all right's not enough? If you're Wilfred Zaha and you're looking at Tottenham tonight in a Champions League semi-final against Ajax, you're spot on. Palace have done all right. They're fine. But Wilf might now be at a point where he wants more than fine.
Yeah, and last season we did show that. I feel like we showed that with Ruben Loftus-Cheek and Johan Cabaye, and the way that we were playing, some of the football was great. And we was actually trying to challenge for top 10. But this season, if you look at it, our average position is 14th. We've been stuck just down there and we haven't gave a good go. And I think that's what separates this season from last season, is the fact that...
Cabaye.
You can say Cabaye, but still, we've got good enough players that we should have at least challenged for top 10. But I don't feel like at any point of the season we've challenged for top 10, and we're probably not going to finish there now. And I think that plays a part as well. Top 10, you can see it as overrated at times. What's the point of finishing top 10? But I still feel like it has influence and has caused frustration between fans as well.
I think that's a great point. If you finish top 10, whilst it doesn't mean a lot on paper, it doesn't lead to qualification for European competition, it does send a signal to your players, it sends a signal to other clubs saying, listen, you know what, we're on the up. Perhaps that is what Palace needs. Talking of European competition, coming up, Champions League update non-stop.
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Crystal Palace Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and DR Kernaz, Nick Gussett and James Howard. It's a big day in the Crystal Palace annual calendar because it's the day where the club's awards are announced for the season. We've got illustrious titles to be won, the likes of Player of the Year, Fans Player of the Year, Players Player of the Year, and there are awards as well for involvement in the community. Those winners have, of course, been publicised by the club on Twitter, but our panel as yet are in the dark as to who has won them. So let's have a chat. For a start, who's your Player of the Year?
I think that's the most obvious. This year, there's no challenge at all. I think it's Aaron Wan-Bissaka, without a doubt.
Wilf doesn't get in the mix?
No. Unfortunately, Aaron Wan-Bissaka has been a different class this year. One of the best right-backs in the Premier League, and you can see it by the attention he has received by big media outlets. He's linked to Man City, to Bayern Munich, to the Dortmunds, and he deserves it. He's been a brilliant player for us, and without a doubt, he's our player of the season.
Yeah, I'd have to go with that as well. I noticed on, I think it was a BBC website, was suggesting, I think Alan Shearer and Hasselbank put their teams of the season, and he was in there as right back.
Yeah, I think, well, right back, I can't think of anyone else, or maybe Trent. But
yeah,
Trent.
Yeah, he was, I think, Lineker's and the other pundits.
The fact that he's there with them type of players, it just shows how big he is. He's one of the best right backs in the Premier League, without a doubt, and he's our best player this season. The fact that he has played right back is quite remarkable that he's won the award, because if you look at it, he does some brilliant challenges, but it just shows that maybe if we had goal scorer, if we had a striker, maybe he would have given a bit more influence. But you don't really think of defensive players as team of the as player of this season.
You mean Hennessy didn't win?
We haven't announced the results yet. We're asking who your player of the year is, Nick. I think there's a point there as well for optimism for England fans, where actually the two best right backs in the Premier League this season have been Aaron Wan-Bissaka and Trent Alexander-Arnold. They're both very, very young men, both English. Trent, of course, has got 9 assists already this season. Aaron Wan-Bissaka has been a defensive rock. So, yeah, you know, England could be in a situation of having two world-class fullbacks down the same side.
But I'm worried. I remember before we had this argument, I was saying Wan-Bissaka should be in England squad. But then after I listened to what Bilic said about Payet, and what happened when he joined the French squad, it was basically the fact that they were just talking about Champions League and Europa League, and they were just saying, oh, who do you play for? He plays for West Ham. And the others, they play for big European clubs. And I feel like he feels like it influenced Payet, and that could happen with Wan-Bissaka. I'm not saying it would, but it is a possibility.
Yeah, his head might get turned.
Yeah, and I haven't really thought about it like that, but that is a potential something to happen. But
Palace for Life Foundation, keep getting him into his old primary school. He won't want to go anywhere.
They'll need to chain him to a desk once he's in there if they want to keep him. Eventually, Headmaster's office, exactly. And Roy Hodgson just sitting there behind the desk with a very, very long contract. Nick, we haven't asked you who your player of the season would be. Are you going with the other two? We're going for our average wing-back.
It's got to be really, hasn't it?
Yeah.
But had he stayed fit, I'd have gone for Sacco, because just like watching him. Always that calamity, that air of he's going to have one or two calamitous moments that 90% out of the time he gets it. But he just reads the game so well. I'd say technically and with a footballing brain, he's head and shoulders above the rest of that team.
Is it just me, or it feels weird that our player of the season contenders, as you said, Saka as well, is just defenders? I normally don't see it that way. It might just be me, but that's why I'm asking you guys. I see it as more player of the season. I feel like the attackers and the midfielders get more of a boost, but this year it's just None of them, really.
Because we haven't had an AJ or anybody like that who'd go for player of the season because of the sheer amount of goals they got, or somebody like Darren Ambrose, where you've got scoring excellent goals out of nowhere. But you've got to remember, Spironi won it a few seasons on the trot as well.
Mm. Wilf, he won it last year, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah.
It's interesting that you should mention Spironi, who has, of course, been at Crystal Palace for what feels like forever. He's played 405 games. He's kept 112 clean sheets. And he's got an award of his very own this evening. He's been in South London for 15 years. And he is the recipient of the Chairman's Award for an outstanding contribution. So a recognition there of Spironi's contribution to the club. Your other winners, Fans Player of the Year, Aaron Wan-Bissaka. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Players Player of the Year, Aaron Wan-Bissaka, and PFA Community Champion, Aaron Wan-Bissaka.
Aaron Wan-Bissaka award show.
Important to note that Kira Sherwood is the winner of that award from the women's team as well. Kira's been doing some great stuff with the community, with school projects as well. So again, as we heard with Palace for Life and Stephanie just there, the club doing really, really good things in the community. But you also mentioned Darren Ambrose. You mentioned screamers. I'm being reminded that Kira is the cousin of James Sherwood. I had a chat with her last week. She will be coming on the show with us at some point. Captain, brilliant, of course, of the women's side. And we wish her all the best. We mentioned Darren Ambrose. Darren Ambrose, of course, a man known for a screamer. With that in mind, my favourite award at any end of season's do is always goal of the season. If you guys had to pick one, the one that leaps out is Andros Townsend versus Manchester City, which might end up being not just Palace's goal of the season, but the goal of the season, full stop. Is that the only option?
Jordan Ayew, when he scored his first goal, got me there in the heart because he cried.
But was it a good goal? I'm not interested in all of this sentimental.
No, it was good. It was nice. It was my favourite goal for glad that player got one. If you can understand what
that, I mean. That's a niche award, but we respect Nick's award.
But no, the Townsend one is by far and away probably the best goal of the last, well, since Ambrose scored that screamer against United.
Yeah, I think this year's play, the end of season awards show must have been boring. Like, everyone already knew what was going to happen before it happened.
No kit reveal. What's going on there?
I went past Box Park before I came here, as I go through East Croydon, and there was just music. I guess the best thing was music. There's no kit reveal, it's just the man I played there, so I guess that's the best thing that happened.
So, goal of the season, any other shouts beyond it made me happy?
I mean,
I think didn't Luka get a really good free kick?
Potentially.
I think he did, didn't he? I'm sure he scored from a free kick.
Was that at home? It was at home. Wasn't it like 2 weeks?
A bit further back than that, but I'm sure that he got a free kick. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, he did. He did at home. I remember the one at home anyways.
Yeah, he did.
But, I mean, it's telling. We haven't really scored. We've only scored 14 goals in 18 games, so there isn't that many options, especially at home anyways.
I think we should have a competition for the best penalty because he scored so many penalties.
Exactly, the Luka penalty award, yeah.
Which one was the best out of the 11 penalties?
I think that would have been brilliant. Just add a little twist to it, yeah.
That would be glorious stuff. He has been banging them in. He's missed only one all year. Very, very impressive guy. If you had to pick, this is just out of interest, this isn't an award tonight, but I want to know, what's your favourite Palace goal of all time?
Whoa.
I didn't see it live.
Okay.
We are going back 25 years or more. We're probably looking, I was about 17 at the time, so 33 years ago. Blimey.
What year is that?
Don't know. John Sulaco away at Forest. We kept drawing with them in the cup, and it was in them days when you had first, you had to replay, then you had a second replay, you had a third replay. We were about to go out. There was about a minute left, and John Sulaco scored against Forest from the halfway line. And the Brian Clough interview afterwards was a masterclass in stating the flipping obvious.
Which was what? What a goal.
Yeah, it takes 1 second. 1 second of magic like that, it turns a game.
He's not wrong. And it's a very good accent. I enjoyed that.
I was quite pleased with Nottingham there, yeah.
Yeah, I'm impressed. James, is that your favourite? Do you have another memory?
I've got a great memory of an all-round experience, actually. It was 1990 Crystal Palace against Manchester United FA Cup final, the player in question had just come back from a broken ankle, and he came on and he absolutely skinned Gary Pallister and scored a goal, and it was Ian Wright.
I had my finger in a splint, a big metal splint, on that day because somebody had slammed the office door in the cheese factory I worked in. I was doing the paperwork because I was in charge at the cheese factory. And they slammed the door shut. It hit the tip of my finger. And
you shouted, "Edam!"
Yes, that's made backwards. Yes, cheese that's made backwards. my finger went at 90 degrees at the knuckle.
Oh, Nick.
I had pain whirlies. It was that bad.
But anyway, at least Ian Wright scored a nice goal.
Anyway, I got a ticket off a bloke on the way up there who happened to have free tickets in the Virgin hospitality area because his sister worked for Virgin. So there was mixed supporters in front of us. And Mr. Wright came on, scored his goal. And I tapped the bloke in front of me, who was a Man United fan. And I went, "Ian, swear word Wright." And I meant to do a fist up, forgetting that I had this big metal thing around my finger.
Did you swear at him?
And I swore at him inadvertently.
Oh, the poor bloke.
That's my cup final memory.
Well, if you're listening, mystery fan, Nick's sorry.
No, I'm not.
DL, what's your favourite?
Oh, favourite goal of all time. I can't go back that. Because I wasn't even around then.
No, don't be rude.
No, I wasn't even around then. I'll be honest. I wasn't around then. You're talking about 25 years ago.
He wasn't even born.
Yeah, I wasn't even born. I don't know. The first goal that came into my head due to how significant it was of recent time. There's so many goals, but I'll just say the FA Cup final. No, not the FA Cup final. That's another goal. The punch one, even though we lost, that was so significant. That's probably the hardest I've celebrated after we scored. Jason Punch and FA Cup final goal. The playoff final against Watford. That was a massive goal as well.
What, the penalty?
Yeah.
Kevin
Phillips. That was massive as well. Another goal I celebrated hugely, the Dwight Gale.
What's your one?
I don't know. I'll just go with Jason Punch, and due to the celebrations, it was just crazy. Okay. I never celebrated like that in my life. I never will.
Jason Punch and wins that award.
A couple of Jedinak free kicks, Nick.
Yes.
Honourable mention as well. One against, was it Villa, actually? Them now. Yeah, he's got a screamer against them.
Wonderful stuff. A quick update for you from the Champions League action. It's still Tottenham 0, Ajax 0, 13 minutes played. We will keep you updated on that throughout the game. And coming up, it's time to answer some of your questions.
This is Love Sport.
It's Johnny Burrow here on Love Sport Radio for the Crystal Palace Fan Show with DR Kernaz, Nick Gillard and James Howard of Back of the Nest. And it's that time in the show where we answer your questions.
Yes, we got one question from Jay. He asked, why can't we pass the ball? Every home game, our passing is terrible. What do you guys think, tactics or players?
Tactics.
Bit of both. No, you...
Or bit of both, yeah.
No, I think Roy is not to blame if PVA can't clear the ball or pass the ball 20 yards. Roy's fault.
Yeah, but I feel like...
The fact that he's got less people to pass to possibly might have some bearing on it, which would be a tactical thing. But they were all at it Saturday, weren't they?
Yeah, but if it's tactical, okay, you can blame the player. But tactically, you have to argue whether he should have stuck with Ward. And why is he leaving Benteke on for so long? So tactically, you can say he should have changed things.
We're talking about at home as well, especially at home, why our passing is terrible. So, yeah, I feel like both do play a part. Tactically, as you said, certain players shouldn't play at home compared to away from home, whereas, I know James McArthur gives a lot, but I still feel like someone else could come in and do a better job than he does, especially with the passing. I don't see him as a great passer personally. But I feel like, at tactics at times, there is a separation. For instance, that's what I noticed mainly against Everton. There's a separation between our midfield and attack, and that contributes to a passing, of course, because you're sometimes lumping the ball forward and giving long passes, so it's easier to intercept. So I feel like both tactics and players contribute to our mess at home. Next question is from Gareth. What youth prospects do we have? And will Yairo Riederwald ever play a game?
Bless him.
Is that, will,
he'll probably go to Ajax next
season. Well, I was about to say, if you're Yairo Riederwald,
can you imagine,
having signed for Palace from Ajax, where he was very highly rated as a youngster, he'll be looking at this tonight, looking at the likes of Matthijs de Ligt and thinking, oh, Lord, I was sold a wrong one by De Boer.
I saw him warm up, so I feel like he still can run. He's, you know, he's still got something in him. I feel like Roy just doesn't like him. I'm pretty sure there was a comment earlier on in the season on his attitude.
I think he put on a bit of weight. I don't think he's obviously
thing as well. The kit don't fit. He don't wear. The play, he apparently wears like the fan kit, so it's not, it doesn't fit into him. that's what I heard.
Are we talking about Yairo Riederwald or yeah.
Honestly, you know, that's what I heard. So that's why
the fan kit.
Yeah, like the players have their own fit kit where it just fits into your body and your muscles just look huge. Whereas a fan kit is just
it's just double XL or triple XL for me.
It's just big. Yeah, exactly. Well, that could be, but he doesn't look big, but. I don't see Yairo Riederwald really having a future at Palace.
He's not his player, is he? He came in under De Boer, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So he's not his player anyway. So whether he plays him or not, it doesn't matter to Roy because he's not going to carry the can or be accountable for that player. So he's not going to take a risk on someone that he didn't bring into the club. He doesn't feel he needs to, probably. And that is quite a big risk. I think he might have had a bit of a game in a cup game during the season.
Yeah, he has played one or two times. But I still feel like when he has played, he put a decent shift in. That's why I'm just confused about it. Even though it's not your player, maybe coach him to be your player, if you know what I mean. So, like, we've played how many games? We're coming towards the end of the season and still he's nowhere. Well, he's on the bench. That's for a starter. But still, he's not going to come on. I'm not hopeful of him coming on.
I think we've had a girth of players in the midfield. I think we've had, beginning of the season, we had injuries up front and back end of the season now we've got injuries in defence. But I think in the midfield, we've most of the time had quite a few players available and he's just a little bit too far down the pecking.
As for players coming through, well, Woods, the defender, has been on the bench a couple of times.
He's injured now.
He's injured. I'm hearing good things about James Daly playing up front. Started to put them away again.
But it's very unlikely unless a serious injury. Just like Wan-Bissaka, it was Foster Mensah, he got injured. Joe Ward got injured. So he really fell down to Wan-Bissaka. And it's just luck, really. Wan-Bissaka might be playing in League One or League Two right now if it wasn't for the injuries. You never know.
It seems to come around every 10 years, doesn't it? So Wan-Bissaka's the latest. 10 years ago, it was Zaha coming through. And then maybe Nathaniel Clyne before that.
Yeah.
And it seems to happen it seems to take about 10 years for these youngsters, one youngster to get through. And we're obviously putting a lot of time and effort.
So do you think you've had your quota then?
I hope not.
Yeah, for another 8 years.
You said De Boer, Roy's thinking De Boer sold me a puppy. Do you think Steve Parrish would have said that as well after four games? That he'd been sold a pup by De Boer.
Quite possibly, but he, of course, bought the pup and went out and looked for it himself. He was quite keen on De Boer.
I hope we're not putting James off of his purchase at the weekend.
Yeah. Maybe that could be the dog's name, given selling of pups. You could call it Frank. Or indeed
Frank.
De Boer.
Frank's a good name for a dog. I bet he's going to call him Frank.
Well, I'm writing that down there. Yeah.
He's making a note. A quick goal update for you from the Championship, not the Champions League. Don't get too excited. Millwall Bristol City, a lovely overhead kick from Gregory, has given Millwall a 1-0 lead.
Are they safe now, Millwall?
They are safe already, hence why this is now going to be a little more comfortable.
Yeah. Next question. Indeed. Mark Collins, should we look to offload Meyer in the summer? Some neat touches, but yet again, he hasn't made the most of getting a start and has looked pretty average.
I upset Patrick O'Connor, our New York correspondent on our other pods. Sunday nights and Thursday nights, listeners, if you go to backthenest.com, you can download all our podcasts there. I'm saying that it's breaking the studio. It's falling around Johnny's ears.
I've thrown my microphone over in protest.
Yeah.
Where was I? Who was I talking about before I plugged the show? Maya. Yeah. I said to Patrick earlier that I was more impressed by Barry Bannon when he played for us than I have been by Maya.
Oh wow. That's why they're talking about Barry Bannon.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no.
How much difference is there between Johnny Williams and Max Meyer?
Max goes forward a bit more than Johnny. Johnny's still along the halfway line, kind of sticking to the halfway line with the ball.
Well, I don't feel like we should sell him. I don't think he's that bad.
Yeah, no, I think there's more to come from him.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like if he plays more games, as I've said, he hasn't really played consistently throughout the season and gets used to it. I feel like there is a quality player in there. And he has, of course, he has had some bad games and some very good games as well. So I'm not done and over. Maybe financially, in his wages, I think it's around 80,000.
How long did we sign him for? Because you got to think of when he's going to be released.
Isn't it 2 years? I remember
two seasons.
Yeah, 2 seasons. Because as soon as we bought him, people were saying, "Oh, we have to get the best out of Max Meyer because he's going to leave us in the second season." Like,
was it a free transfer?
Yeah, well, it's free transfer, but still, there's fees that it's signed.
Yeah, so there were some fees, but we pay him a lot of money for a couple of seasons. Yeah.
The other worrying thing I read was that Luke has only got a year left on his contract.
Is it?
So that
I haven't really thought about that.
He's played in the Champions League. Is he going to be happy?
I mean, Joe Ledley played in the Champions League as well. It doesn't mean if you play in the Champions League, it doesn't mean that you're just a quality player.
Wayne Hennessy played in a European semi-final.
Yeah. And now he can't make the Palace first team and he's one of the most hated players.
So going back to your point, I would keep Max Meyer.
Yeah, I would give him another try. I feel like, yes, he has had some good and bad games, but still, I feel like, considering that we've struggled scoring goals, maybe next season...
As a creative player, as an impact player, I would keep him. Yep.
Okay. Do you have any more time, or...?
We can have one more, if you've got one you're keen to do, quickly.
Is it time... Okay, we got one from Stuart. Is it time to get rid of Roy? Need a number...
I said a quick one, dear. Yeah. Just the biggest question of all.
Yeah, quick yes or no. Is it time to get rid of Roy? That's a quick one.
I would say
maybe. Maybe. All right. Yeah.
No, yes. Yes. Get
right.
somebody doing.
Yes.
I wouldn't get rid of him that quickly. I think you've got to be pretty much have someone lined up.
Okay, then.
James, at least, is a man of sense.
Yeah.
We can get into that in some more depth later. But coming up, it's time to get into the next fixture. It's Cardiff. It's a tricky question for Palace fans, this one. If you beat Cardiff, you relegate them. And as part of the process, you keep Brighton up. If you roll over, could you relegate the Seagulls? Don't go anywhere. That's right. You're listening to the Crystal Palace Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and DR Kernaz, Nick Gillard, and James Howard of Back of the Nest. And it's time to look ahead to Palace's next opponent this week. It is, of course, Cardiff. And I'm delighted to say that we are joined on the line by Alid Blake, who is a journalist and author of Bluebirds Reunited, the story of Neil Warnock's promotion-winning side. Good evening, Alid. Thanks ever so much for joining us. I'm going to kick you off with a small question, just a small one, which is, can Cardiff stay up?
Short answer, no. Long answer, yes. I mean, I think it's going to be a very, very tough ask for us to stay up. I was deeply, deeply disappointed on Saturday evening, as you can imagine, after the Brighton result and having ourselves lost in the afternoon to Fulham. We've given ourselves a lot to do, and it also rests on how Brighton get on against Arsenal and Manchester City on the upcoming weekend. So I probably not, you know, disappointingly for us, but we've given ourselves a chance, and, you know, we still got our foot in the Premier League. We're not out of it yet.
Just remember Oldham all them years ago. Put us
yeah,
down.
Exactly. Yeah, blimey.
You know, you've got to cling to it. And we're in a really, really difficult position because we kind of want to go Brighton to go down. Well,
I know,
We really, really do. But, you know, can we be as professional as the Leeds manager was in letting Villa score after that debacle in the Championship the other day? Or, you know, it's not fair on all the other teams in the league if we don't give it our best shot against you. So that's a tricky one, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I know. Fans will. You'll want to see Brighton sort of go down as sort of rival fans. But
as late sure as, pressure, In the 89th minute of the last game.
In as disappointing a way as possible, I suppose, yeah. I'm sure the players won't look on that like that, the game like that. They'll be as professional as Newcastle were on Saturday, given they really don't have anything to play for now. I think they showed a lot of professionalism in the way they approached the Brighton game. I suspect it's sort of, you know, too much of a hill for us to climb now, and I don't think we'll do it, unfortunately. I mean, but it's been a season of a lot of ups and a lot of downs, and I suppose Saturday was sort of the one of the big come downs of them all.
I really like Neil Warnock, and the opinion among Palace fans is divided. But what he did for us the first time he came in, he got Wilf back. He got the team firing again. He was pretty rubbish after that. What are your thoughts on him? I mean, do you want him to stay with you if you go down? Have you been happy with his tenure in the Premier League, or could he have done better?
It's been very mixed, to be honest, Johnny. I mean, I'm a big Neil Warnock fan. I think, you know, my book sort of is kind of a love letter to him in many ways.
Because did you reply, Alad? Have you had a response? Dear Alad, please stop contacting me. Regards, Neil.
I don't know if he swiped left or right. But I think he did such a wonderful job in galvanising the club. We united a really fractured club, and we were all over the place before he came in. He came in, rescued that. I mean, in kind of a similar way, I think he did with you when he first came into Palace, and sort of within 6 months we were charging towards the playoffs. It was well beyond us in the first season anyway, but because of where we were when he came in, and then his second season, for the full season, he it was such a remarkable job that he did in terms of turning us into promotion winning side from where we were the previous year. I don't think any other manager in the world, I don't think any other manager in British football could have done that, and probably not the world. So I think we were very lucky to have him with us at that time. The Premier League has been a different story. I think he's made mistakes, as everyone does in their professional life. I think a lot of his mistakes are forgivable. I don't think they the decisions he's made haven't totally brought us to relegation. It's been sort of part of a an overall picture. So I think I'd like him to stay in the summer, because I don't think there's a better manager to get us back into the Premier League if we do get relegated from the division. Because of his track record, and I think he's just sort of the best man for the job, and I think he'll want to get us back up, because it's probably going to be his final season in football if he does stay on.
I think obviously you've had a really difficult time this second half of the season for obvious reasons, and full credit to Neil Warnock and how he handled that at the time, and you didn't get the striker in that you needed. Looking at it, you know, seeing the fixtures that are coming up, and, you know, I can see you guys beating us on Saturday. I really can. We can't really gain that much more of a position in the league, and our players could be on the beach by Saturday. You really will be up for a win.
They weren't last Saturday.
Looking at Brighton, they've got Arsenal away. Well, Arsenal fans are looking for a massive reaction at home. Yeah. So I can see Brighton losing that. Yeah. Last game of the season for Brighton is Man City at home. So that's another loss. And then you've got... So if you beat us, you've got to beat Man United away. Now, Man United are not a good side at the moment. And if you Warnock gets your players really psyched up for that one, I could see you winning that game, to be honest. So I think you should be a little bit more positive. I'm getting the feeling you're already feeling that you're doom-gloomed relegated.
Maybe it's just my... I've just been a Cardiff City
fan too long. It's a sort of
realistic
disappointments, yeah. But I agree with you. I think, you know, if looking at the season, looking at the fixtures at the start of the season, knowing maybe it would come down to the final game, which it might well do, Man United looked, was sort of, oh God, we've got Man United on the final game of the season. That is going to consign us to the championship. But, you know, that, you know, you can look at it on that terms. But actually, because they've been so woeful over the last few weeks since Solskjaer was given the job permanently, then yeah, I think you're right. We have got a chance, and I'd like to think that the players, you know, Warnock will be able to sort of do one of his Churchillian dressing room speeches and get the players up for it as he can do. I mean, there's so many sort of stories within the story if it does come down to that, because obviously we had Solskjaer managing us the last time we were relegated from the Premier League, and he was such an awful manager for us. And yeah. I spoke to some of the journalists about this when he was appointed, and I just couldn't believe that Man United had taken a gamble on him, because he did such a bad job for us, and he'd sort of kind of masterminded our relegation and then created a whole catalogue of problems that Warnock was sort of left to sort out a few years afterwards. So it would be a nice way to be able to stay up if we were able to beat Manchester United and sort of pile the pressure on Solskjaer as well, because even though he seems a really nice guy and a decent human being, I mean, I don't think Cardiff City fans really respect him in terms of his footballing pedigree or his managerial pedigree, at least.
I've got a horrible question for you. It's really uncouth, but I'm going to circle like a vulture.
Yeah.
One player from your team, if you do go down, would you recommend Palace go for?
Camarasa, definitely. He's on loan with us. If we stay up, I'd love him to stay with us. Victor Camarasa, he's an. I don't know if you remember. I don't know if he played the game at Selhurst Park.
I can't remember. I'll be honest.
In December, I think he did actually. But he's a sort of brilliant attacking midfielder. We've got on loan from Real Betis, and he'd cost around about 15-20 million. But he's a player any Premier League club, bar the top four, would benefit from having in their team.
He's a cracking footballer, Alid. He's been very, very impressive all year. And, of course, does have a screamer in his locker, which we all enjoy.
He does,
the biggest question of all, of course, is how do you think the game's going to go? I'm going to have to press you for a score prediction.
Oh. I'm really superstitious about predicting scores. I've never, ever liked...
Okay. No, we won't force you to break the habit of a lifetime. I will be honest, Alid, and say I have never had that response to that question before in my life.
It's one of these weird things I've got. My father and brother asked me to give them score predictions. I'm like, I just can't ever do it because I just if I say we'll win 2-0 and we lose 3-1, I know that that's my fault then. I'll never be able to forgive myself.
Okay. No, well, Alid, we don't want to give you a crisis of self-belief, but we're very, very grateful for your time. It was lovely to speak to you.
Thanks very much for having me on.
Not at all. Thanks for coming. Alid Blake there, journalist and author of Bluebirds Reunited, which is the story of Neil Warnock's promotion-winning side. Alid, of course, described it as a love letter to Neil Warnock, which is not a phrase I ever thought I would hear. Quick Champions League update for you. We haven't had a goal, but it's more bad news for Tottenham. Jan Vertonghen sustained a head injury, got absolutely clattered by one of his own teammates, Toby Alderweireld, both former Ajax men. Vertonghen looked to be out cold. He was then back sitting up. There appeared to be blood around his nose. He came back on, having been taken off. He then clearly wasn't able to continue. He went off to the side of the pitch, seemed to be being sick. Moussa Sissoko has come on as his replacement. Many things going on here. The first is this conversation about concussion in football, whether these head injuries are treated fast enough and in the right ways. That question is reopened. The other, in a more cynical sense, is what system are Spurs going to play now? They were relying on those three centre-halves. They're now going to have to switch it up, and they're going to need a fantastic performance from Moussa Sissoko. Talking of fantastic performances, can Palace produce one at the weekend?
This is Love Sport. Is Love Sport.
It's the Crystal Palace fan show here on Love Sport Radio, and there's drama in the Love Sport studio around me because we've heard that James Howard isn't going to be able to watch Palace at the weekend because, as the dutiful father that he is, he's going to be watching his daughter swim. And for a moment, he thought, hang on a minute, there's a chance that if the race finishes quickly, I might just catch some of the game, at which point Nick Gillard responded immediately, you shouldn't be wishing that your daughter loses her race.
Well, I thought it was a 3 o'clock kickoff, and no, Diaz just told me it's a 5:30. So
yeah.
my brain is going in overdrive now, thinking, how do I get back from Gillingham in Kent back to where I live in West Wickham? And I'm thinking, what time's her last event? And do you know what? It could be doable.
Talking of travelling a long way, I've been contacted in the week by at ebelling_j on the old Twitter sphere. His pal, Trevi Davis, is cycling from St David's in Wales to Broadstairs in Kent.
On the Cardiff front.
Yeah, and that's to raise money for St Christopher's Hospice in Sydenham in memory of his fantastic wife, Karen. So they've got a... You go to uk.virginmoneygiving.com and search for Le Tour de Broadstairs.
How do you spell that?
You'll find T-H-A-T.
Okay.
Yeah. And no, it's L-E-T-O-U-R de Broadstairs, B-R-O-A-D-S-T-A-I-R-S.
Well done.
Just for DR there. I'm sure the rest of you would have worked.
What's that?
Out.
Is that key stage three, Nick? I know you're a teacher.
Yeah, you go to Broadstairs on your key stage one trip if you're sort of anywhere in southeast London. So, you know, you should be knowing that. Also, very, very quickly, a friend of mine set up a new Crystal Palace forum on the interweb called Palace Comrades. It's in its infancy, but I promised I'd give him a shout out. So go and have a look over there, sign up and talk all things Palace there.
Wonderful stuff. Talking of all things Palace, it is, of course, Cardiff up next. And it's presenting you guys with a dilemma. You win, you watch your team succeed on the pitch, which is nominally every football fan's dream. But if you do witness that, you will also have witnessed Brighton staying in the Premier League. Whereas if you do roll over, you could play a part in relegating Brighton. Roy Hodgson, the Palace boss, has said that his players have a moral duty to play as well as they can, even though their Premier League status is secure. Simple question. I'm giving you a choice. Palace win and Brighton stay up, or Palace lose and Brighton go down?
Oh, if it was that easy, then yeah.
Palace I know it's not that easy, but assuming it is, well, let's say even just keeping the hopes alive, would you lose to Cardiff just to give yourselves a chance of relegating Brighton?
If we lose, I won't be that surprised, to be fair. So I wouldn't mind losing if that means that Brighton could potentially go down, but I think it's a bit too difficult now, especially due to the fact that Cardiff lost against Fulham, which was a six-pointer. And now you're expecting a miracle to happen, Cardiff to beat us, which is not a miracle, but Cardiff to go to Old Trafford, even though they're playing bad, it's still Old Trafford and still Manchester United, and they'll want to end on a high. So it's going to be very hard. I don't know. I'd rather we lose, though. I'm not worried about it.
What semi-final was it where we went to Cardiff? Was it a playoff one year or not? When we were absolutely rubbish. I know Chris Hamblin went down there, and it was the lack of effort for a team in a semi-final was appalling.
I went Cardiff.
Wasn't it the playoff final?
Playoff semi-final it would have been.
Because I went to the playoff. Was it the playoff final?
We had the playoff final at the Millennium Stadium.
But
Ship scored.
That's right. Yeah, I was thinking of that one.
But I'm not too sure about the semi-final. But my first ever away game was at Cardiff, I believe. Mm-hmm. And that was when Zaha was playing for Cardiff. And that's when Jason Punchin scored. We won. I'm pretty sure we won 2-1 or something. 3-1.
What was he like for Cardiff, Zaha?
What? He was all... They hate them. I remember at that game, they were like taken back. There was chance... I'm paraphrasing, but there were chants saying take him back because we were saying Zaha come home, and they were like take him back.
Yeah, and he was pretty poor, wasn't he? And I was working in Bristol at the time and had a Cardiff colleague sitting opposite me, and he was going to Cardiff with some season ticket holders. He wasn't a season ticket holder himself, and He was just saying the guy's rubbish. Absolutely. Yeah, I say, I'm sorry, he's not. And we would have an argument every week. And I say, he's not. I said, it's just the way you're playing him.
Is that how the day would begin, James? Morning, Chris. How are you? Fine. Zaha's rubbish.
Yeah, that's it.
I've just seen this other thing that's got people's goats.
Sheffield is glorious.
Sheffield Wednesday sending congratulations to Sheffield United for going up and how good it's going to be for the city of Sheffield.
It's extraordinary.
They don't understand.
It's a terrible misjudgment from the Sheffield Wednesday chairman, isn't it, of what football is, how football works, what Sheffield is as a place, how that rivalry between the Blades and the Owls functions. I've got a mate who's a Wednesday fan, and as soon as I saw that, I started giving it massive in the group chat. I was going, that's the most tin pot thing I've ever seen. You've been mugged off by your own club. You should be ashamed. They're furious, Wednesday fans. All of the replies to the tweet of the statement are just, no.
Nothing to do with me.
Nothing to do with me. Delete this now. Not in my name. They're standing by it.
Yeah. Just very quickly on another club in trouble, Bolton. Didn't play their game against Brentford at the weekend. Some people were gloating on social media saying, oh, well, that's karma for Dougie. No, sorry, mate. People who watch Bolton are working men and women, just like we are in here. They have that 90-minute fix. They have the banter with their opposition fans just for the sake of the fans and thousands of them. Their lives, many of them, football is completely their lives. Like DR, it is for you. Palace is your life. Football's your life, Johnny, pretty much, apart from a bit of current affairs. But to deny thousands of people that, it's just wrong. And you know, there's got to, I know you can't say, oh, yeah, just chuck money at teams who are badly run, but money-ridden world.
And equally, it's not just denying people football. There are, of course, a lot of normal people, as well as footballers, who are employed by that club. There are a lot of jobs on the line. This isn't as straightforward as, hey, football fans, you're having a hard one. Actually, the tea lady, the kit man, the press officer, all of these people could be out of a job.
Exactly, and that's the worst thing about it. People don't really think about that. Yes, the footballers are not getting paid, and that's really bad, of course, but as Johnny said, it's the other people that gets unnoticed, and they're probably not getting paid, and that's, you know, it's hard.
Controversially, I wouldn't even like to see Brighton go under, seriously, because there are people who've supported Brighton for as long as I've supported Palace, poor things, but, you know, it's their life.
Bad. It's bad.
Yeah, and a rivalry, the reason why it's a rivalry and the point of that rivalry is to see the rivalry enacted on the football pitch. If the other team goes out of existence, you haven't in some way won. You've just lost a football club and lots of people have lost their livelihoods.
Yeah, this is why I can't understand the majority of Palace fans saying, hands on heart, that they want them to go down.
Because you'd rather have that scrap twice a season.
We got beat three times this season. And the first thing on my mind is, if we play next season,
what's
we
the
beat
score,
them.
Johnny?
2-1.
Oh, okay.
So I'm all up for play them every season and hopefully beat them. This is a blip this season.
I would say that, but we've been outmanaged really badly.
No, but that's defeatist. Keep them up, batter them, teach them a lesson. Talking of teaching people lessons, it is, of course, Cardiff up next. And, gents, it's that point in the show where I have to press you for your score predictions. What are you saying? It's Crystal Palace versus Cardiff.
Fingers crossed, 4-0 Cardiff. I'll be happy. Just set up the goal difference as well.
And what are you saying, James?
I think we're going to lose 1-0.
Oh, is that hope or think?
No, I want us to win.
Okay, you want us to win.
I always want us to win. Wonderful. I'm not like these guys. I'm a proper fan.
And Nick?
5-3 Cardiff with a gyro hat-trick for Palace.
Right, okay, realism is something we're massively keen on here at Love Sport Radio. It's been a glorious Crystal Palace fan show. And, of course, if your predictions are right, we'll still be here next week on Tenterhooks, not just about the beginning to Crystal Palace's transfer seasons, but about the potential end to Brighton's time in the Premier League. You'll have to join us then on the Crystal Palace fan show.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.